Welcome back to Pitside from the Plex. Today's guest is Heather Lawrence Benedict. She is the Director of Sport Operations for CrossFit, but she has a varied background in sports, starting at the University of Florida, where she was in facility management and event management, and then she moved on to being an associate AD at Southeastern Louisiana University, got her PhD and started teaching at Ohio University, and that's where I got to know Heather a little bit. She helped design the education program for Sports ETA, where I sit on the board, and then from there, she's still doing some teaching, but now she's working for CrossFit. So it was interesting to hear her career path, how she got where she was, why she got into teaching, and why she still teaches, and how she's looking at CrossFit and jumping into that job right as the pandemic started, and how that affected everything, and then getting her take on women in sports and how to get to the job that you want and that rocky road that can come along. So it was great getting her insight, and I hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Pitchside from the Plex podcast, coming to you from the Adventist Healthcare Fieldhouse at the Maryland Soccerplex with your hosts, Matt Liver and Kim Walter.
Have you made your New Year's resolutions yet? Resolve to volunteer with the American Red Cross and make a difference in 2022. People just like you volunteer with the Red Cross every day. Red Cross volunteers are neighbors helping neighbors through emergencies like fires and floods. Red Cross volunteers also help ensure life-saving blood is available when needed by supporting local blood drives. Visit www.redcross.org/volunteer for more information.
At Roll by Goodyear, we change your tires, not your plans. Let our mobile van come install your tires wherever or whenever during business hours that you choose. So give Roll by Goodyear a call at 240-907-6461 and mention this podcast for 10% off your tire purchase. Again, that number is 240-907-6461. Roll by Goodyear. Tires on your terms.
All right, welcome back to the show. Today's special guest is Heather Lawrence Benedict from CrossFit. She is the Director of Sport Operations. She can get into what that is, but welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much. I'm super pumped to have this time with you.
Yeah, we're glad to have you, and I think we've talked before this, but you are a second CrossFit guest, and you actually know our first CrossFit guest, but we'll get into that. So before we get there, kind of give everybody your backgrounds. It's a very interesting journey how you got to CrossFit, as far as I see it, so I'm sure people would like to hear about that.
Yeah, I feel like really fortunate, kind of just thinking back to how I actually landed at CrossFit, and it's not one of those things that I ever could have predicted, but things just kind of fell together. So I have always been in the sport industry, even as a kid, I think, because my mom was a coach. She was always like had different tennis lessons going on and things of that nature. And when I ended up at the University of Florida as a student athlete, immediately I thought what Jeremy Foley, the athletic director, did was so cool. Like I wanted to be that person. And I told him after he guest lectured in one of my freshman classes that I was going to have his job one day, which he still remembers to this day. What are we, like 25 years removed?
They still remind you that you haven't taken his job yet?
We still talk like every 6 or 8 weeks, right? And it's crazy how careers just kind of ebb and flow over the years. But that was like a really defining moment for me when I realized that like maybe I actually could as a freshman in college. And really from that point forward, I did everything I could in the athletics department at the University of Florida to get to know people, to volunteer, and ended up really falling in love with event operations. And so that was really cool. Throughout my undergraduate degree and my master's degree, had a lot of different positions in college athletics and was fortunate to also work bowl games and kind of go on the road and do comp tickets, like anything. Was hired on at the University of Florida full-time while I was doing my master's degree. And after that, had a chance to go to another institution as a senior woman administrator in college athletics at Southeastern Louisiana University. And from there, started teaching a class and enjoyed the teaching aspect. So started combining both teaching and administration and did that for quite a while. So that was really fun. And ended up full-time faculty at Ohio University from there. So we're kind of now talking about like the first 10 years of my career. spent 15 years at Ohio University working in academia, did a lot of research in the CrossFit space and got to know the folks there. And then about 12 months ago, had the opportunity to join the company full-time. And so that is kind of it in a nutshell. And then hopefully we can kind of double tap on some of those as we go.
So you were an athlete at Florida as well, didn't you? Swimming, was that what it was?
Diving.
Yep. That was close. Yep. It was in the water. Yeah. It was somewhere in the vicinity.
It's all chlorine, so it all
works. So University of Florida has a pretty well-known swim and dive.
How's Florida program. State's?
I don't think it's that good. No. I mean, Florida, if you're going to do swimming and diving, particularly if you're thinking about going like the Olympic route, like Florida is the place to go for sure.
Or to get an education or any of those things.
No, Florida State would be the choice there.
You know what? We'll just agree that like being in the Sunshine State, honestly, I grew up in Seattle, Washington. So it did not take much on the recruiting trip to either school to be like, yes, Florida.
Where you're like, oh my God, what is this big yellow thing in the sky?
Man, I visited and people were studying outside in the wintertime.
Yeah.
That was pretty much it.
Yeah. I don't think either of us can really talk a lot of crap about the football season this year, but so we'll just leave it be.
Just relive the glory.
We're looking toward the future, always.
Absolutely. It's a rebuilding year, and I've been saying that for a while.
So when you're doing the event operation stuff at Florida, what all did you get into? We always ask people that are on the operation side, like, what funny stories do you have? Our favorite so far is a ventriloquist dummy at a WAC baseball championship that got out of hand. It's a great story. You should listen to that one, but I'm sure you have some good ones too.
The ventriloquist did not stay. That's that's the spoiler there.
I don't know if I can top that.
I don't think many people can.
Right? Like, I've got some where, you know, the golf carts weren't there when you went back outside for after a game. And then they're found outside the bar a few hours later downtown.
As they should
be. That's always, as they should be, where they belong, of course. So that was a good one. I mean, one of the stories that helped me with my career and kind of solidified some of the things with respect to sport leadership is one where we always had different fraternities and organizations that would come in overnight, strike the stadium, clean it up. And especially homecoming, there was always a big comedy show and big event in the stadium at night. Mm-hmm. Then the following morning, normally it was an earlier homecoming game. So it's quick turnaround, quick changeover. And we had one particular game I remember where the no-shows on the strike on cleanup were incredible. Like, it wasn't going to happen. And it was one of those things, and Jeremy Foley was the AD at the time, and he stepped up and like helped. And then like other leaders stepped up and helped. And like the job just got done.
Because it's got to. I think
it's got to, right? And so I think that was one that maybe not as funny as like, oh my God, the golf carts are gone. However, it's one that like really resonated with me as far as like, doesn't matter if it's trash, it doesn't get cleaned up, a barricade that's in the wrong spot. Like it's something you can just jump in and do at whatever point in your career you are. And it could really like help somebody that's coming up develop their own kind of leadership philosophy for the future and kind of pass it on type of thing.
Yeah. I'm the same aspect. And Kim will tell you this too, that I am much more hands-on when it comes to operations, regardless of what role I'm in an organization, that I'm never willing to tell somebody to go do something that I've never done or not willing to do myself. So if it means picking up trash or painting something or whatever it may be, to just get the job done and move on. Part of it's because I don't like sitting behind a desk, but that's a personal issue. But I'm the same way. Like seeing, and I've had people like that too in like my jobs that they're willing to jump in and help and do it. And that's like, okay, this makes sense. This, you know, this is a team organization and moving forward. So I great philosophy. I love it. I'm glad to hear other people live by it too.
Yeah, and really, like, how many zip ties have we all either cut or put up?
Oh, zip ties and duct tape. You can solve every problem you have.
I wish I knew the number. I wish I had, like, kept track of how many zip ties over a career you can actually be dealing with.
I wish I invented zip ties because I'd be rich.
Right.
So you moved to southeastern Louisiana. Where is that in Louisiana?
Yeah, so it's in Hammond, Louisiana, which is about 40 minutes kind of south of LSU and kind of like in a triangle across the big bridge there from New Orleans.
Got it. And so senior women administrator, can talk through what that is and can give some background, I'm sure from you, the academic side, why the NCAA created that and kind of talk through it. I don't think most people realize that that's a role in every school in NCAA has one.
I didn't know it existed. Yeah. I didn't know it existed.
Really? Yeah. It's really interesting because, you know, our timing is good. This is going to be the 50th anniversary of Title IX, if you can believe it. 50 years. Crazy this year. And February 2nd is National Girls and Women in Sports Day, which is an annual event. Yep. And something that, you know, definitely everybody should be talking about as well. And the position of senior woman administrator really does play into that, right? So we all know that young girls need to see other people like them in different positions, coaching, leadership, things of that nature. And so that is one of the things that this position allows for. And technically, it is the senior most female athletic administrator within the athletics department. It is not a job, there's nothing that says what the person has to do. It can be in marketing, development, sports supervision, operations, but it's kind of the highest ranking female that is not the athletics director. You never used to have to say that. The fact that you have to say that is good now, because female women ADs do have senior women administrators on their staff. And so if you think way back, most athletics departments had like a men's department and a women's department. And then what happened is around Title IX, those departments merged in many schools. And like the female did not end up being the AD, right? The women's athletics director did not end up being the AD. The men's did. And so really athletics departments became even more male dominated. So it's an unintended negative consequence of a good intended thing to combine athletics departments. One of the ways the NCAA proposed some years after that to create more opportunity for women in leadership roles and to have a voice for student athletes that were female is to have a position like the senior woman administrator. And so when I was in that role, I had the opportunity to work with our coaches. I had sports supervision responsibilities, and I got to plug into football as well. Even I was at a school that was starting a football team after not having one for 18 years. So tons of opportunity. At the same time, the female student athletes knew I was there and ready at a drop of a hat for anything that they needed.
So staying on that kind of role, obviously you've seen in your roles from the AD to the academic side from both, you know, from big schools that, you know, we've come a long way on the women's equality in sports, especially in the NCAA side of thing, but there's still a big chunk that we need to fix. Like, what do you think is that next big thing that we're going to tackle?
Great question. And I wish there was a day where I turned on the news and there wasn't a story of inequity in athletics. But I mean, we've had so many still. Everything, you know, that made big national news with the inequities with respect to the training room or the weight room facilities at the Women's Final Four a couple of years ago. And unfortunately, it takes that kind of media attention sometimes to make some changes. And the changes have been made. So the good news is that when things are elevated to that level, they're not as egregious as they used to be. So it takes less discrimination to bring it to the forefront.
That's true.
Right. So we're getting there. And we've got some pay equity. We have pay inequity and pay equity going on in different sports around the world. And it's interesting because you would think that the U.S. would be kind of leading the way with things like this, like paying their male and female
national
teams. We're pretty terrible at it. Thank you. Glad I didn't have to say that. Yep. But you can look around the world and you can see all sorts of examples of countries that are able to make this work and that it's just what they do.
Yeah, we just had a guest on that will air shortly from the NWSL. So we used to be the home for the Washington Spirit, and she used to play here, and they just won a national championship. But she's also the head of the Players Association, so she's talking about their collective bargaining agreement negotiation that they're going into. And, you know, that's one of the things, like, they're looking – at what MLS players make, what they make, and they know they're not quite at the same level. They're a much younger league, and you know, she's still talking about the same things, and the women's national soccer team is still suing U.S. soccer over pay inequity, and you know, they're actually won a World Cup and the men haven't, and so it's striking that we're so bad at this.
Yeah, it's crazy. And even trickling down to the youth level, it's still assumed, like when the call, I have a son right now that's about to start his second basketball league for the year. And like the call for coaches kind of assumed that it was going to be the dads. Like there's just little things like that. Or like if you're going down the sports aisle, like I still don't understand why we have to play with pink soccer balls and not just a soccer ball. Or like why I don't think to buy a girl a piece of sports equipment for a birthday party that kids are going to, right? Like it just like a mind shift. So it's like we are getting there, and I wonder what we need to do at the like grassroots level to create young girls where it's not a second thought. So yeah, this 50th anniversary will start some really interesting dialogues around Title IX.
Yeah, I mean, we still see it in the youth soccer level here. There's a huge drop off around the age of 13. And it's not just soccer. It's a lot of sports where we just lose female athletes at that age. And no one's come up with a reason why that makes sense or a solution to it. And like, we struggle with it all the time here with our own recreational leagues. I mean, it's even not even like elite athletes. It's just recreational soccer. And we see the same drop off. So it's a big problem. We just don't know how to solve it yet.
Were there specific issues back when you were working at Southeastern Louisiana? Were like there specific issues that like the female athletes dealt with that you sort of helped them overcome or that you helped deal with that you think are different than male athletes were dealing with at that university?
Yeah, great question. So when I was there and we added football, like our facilities weren't ready for it, right? And you can think about not just from like a math perspective and Title IX, but thinking about the kind of perception of our women's athletics teams, that without a football program, there is a perceived, like women's soccer was really popular. So there was a lot of concern about like, well, gosh, football is going to come in and now the attention is only going to be on this sport. So there was some Title IX compliance issues that we needed to really address up front, as well as like, if we're taking a locker room for football, like we need to be building one for women's soccer.
Yeah.
So those were the kind of things. It was really like being an advocate for them, for keeping attention on them while people were so invested in this new sport that was being added.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah. It's also, it's sad that we have to talk about it, but the way universities get around Title IX sometimes, you see all these upgrades to football stadiums that they turn into academic buildings. Because then
Florida State
being one of them, because then it doesn't come under the Title IX because it's an academic building. They just put some seats on top and call it part of the stadium then. So it's these little loopholes.
Our testing center is in our football stadium. Come on now, Matt. That makes sense.
Yes. The funding, like the way the funding comes in for some of those too, it's really interesting. And I will say the state of Florida has been amazing in that they fund women's athletics in universities more heavily than like most other states. I don't want to speak for like every state, but it's really cool, right?
I will say in terms of like the infrastructure that the female athletes had access to and the male athletes, if at least from an outsider's perspective, because I was not a student athlete at that point. So it seemed relatively equal from my perspective. Now, maybe Tori can speak differently to that, but yeah. At least it seemed equal from the outsider's perspective.
All right. So we get through that. And why in the world did you want to go back and get a PhD?
Oh my gosh. I have no idea.
It just sounds like so much school.
I wanted Jeremy Foley's job, right?
Yeah, true.
And actually, the real reason is that I was sitting in a basketball game at the University of Florida before I finished my master's. And I had two of our senior athletics administrators sitting next to me right behind press row. And I think I was completely cornered because they were like, hey, I heard that they're starting this new higher education PhD program that designed for working professionals. And I was working full time for the athletics department. And they hadn't started it yet. They're like, you should really do that. I'm like, I'm done. I've got my master's. Like, I'm going to go rule the world, right? And I walked out of there that game after a conversation. And the next day I found myself over on the College of Education applying for this new PhD program. So
yeah.
You got suckered into it.
I got suckered into it. And one of the best decisions I ever made. So I thank those two gentlemen profusely, because it broke down so many perceived communication barriers with campus leaders.
I was going to say, I think anytime you have a higher level degree like that, anytime you walk into a room, I feel like that's probably got to help out in some fashion.
Yeah, I mean, what you're talking about with the communication with other campus leaders, there's such a disconnect on a college campus between the academic world and the sports world sometimes. And there's some animosity in there for good reason. I don't think they're on the same plane in any shape or form sometimes. But yeah, I can definitely see how that would be helpful. But I would say PhD in the sports world is pretty odd. I mean,
it's odd, yeah. But I've been called odd before, so I'm good.
That's a good thing.
It was a blast. I really, some of the things I really dug into were things like public funding models for higher education overall and how athletics fit into that. I did a lot with respect to job satisfaction for different types of college athletics administrators and understanding where the burnout was and where people, how people were motivated. So it ended up being just the absolute perfect program for me, because I also could continue my career. I was still working full time and had all the support in the world from the folks around me. So it was great. And the fact that I eventually ended up teaching, thank goodness I took the time then to do that.
Yeah. Would you go back and do it again if you were rethinking that situation now?
Yeah, I would. And it's interesting because there were not sport management PhDs when I did mine. So mine's in higher education administration, and now there are. And I mentor a lot of students that are considering it still. And I have this internal dialogue as to kind of what the degree should be in. If they've been in sport management up until a certain point, should they do another sport management one? Or should they do organizational communication or some, or higher education, depending on what their goals are? So it's really cool how many different academic tracks there are and how much more flexible things are and kind of customized, like really rigorous, but still able to make it more about where people are headed in their career.
Yeah, I mean, I've had this conversation with kids in college now. And so we'll take Kim as an example. She has her sports management from Florida State, or kinesiology, whatever you guys call it. But
no, yeah, it's sports management. Yeah. And I dual majored in psych, but mostly primarily sports management.
It answers a lot of questions for me there. Yeah. But people that do that and they say, hey, I'm going to get my master's in sports management. And I'll be like, what about an MBA? Like, if depending on what you want to do, if you want to run a team or be on the business side of things, like the MBA may be way more useful than another degree in sports management that's just going to repeat a lot of what you learned in the undergrad, hopefully if it was a good program. So I think there is kind of your prime example of a different track to get to the same place, but it made sense for your career path.
Yeah, for sure. And it's really cool having a chance to really, because of those options, it gives you a chance, and I'm sure you both do too, when you're talking to students or young professionals trying to figure out what's next, to really understand what they're trying to accomplish. And sometimes that PhD is absolutely not the right thing at that time. Like going in and committing to a PhD, if you're not sure that that's
causes me anxiety,
right? Like bad news bear, like you don't, or like, oh, I'm going to do it because I happen to be on this campus, but I'm not even interested in the program. Like they're already working in college athletics. They can do it. I'm like, dude, still like a big chunk of your life. You're committing to it. So you better want to, like, don't you want to enjoy what you're doing with your time?
Yep.
So I think that conversation has to be really, holistic for each person.
Yeah. I think a lot of people fall in that trap. Like when they're in that role where they're already working at the school, where if they do the next program, the school will pay for some or all of it. And they're like, oh, I'll just do it. But then you're like, but do you want to, and do you need to, is a very different question. And it's great, they'll pay for it. But again, you're going to give up 2-3+ years of your life working on something that you will never use, and you'll hate yourself for doing it.
Right. I mean, totally agree with that.
All right. So you have this PhD, you decide you're going to start teaching, which is a whole nother set of questions. How did you end up at Ohio? And, what was that like? Was it I'm going to go teach, I'm going to looking for a teaching job, or did they something else perk your interest to go there?
It was the only place I applied. It was like, so it's really weird. Academia, they hire you like 10 months before you start. So it's like September of a year. And I'm like, oh, and Jeremy Foley, like, the guy is an amazing mentor to me. He was then too. He was like, hey, and he's an alum of Ohio University's sport management graduate program. Mm-hmm. He was like, hey, they're looking for a faculty member. If you were ever going to teach, that would be the place for you. There's a sense of urgency. There's exposure to global sport business. They view it as a segment of the industry, and everybody has worked in sport. So it is just the way Ohio University has always functioned and hired a very practical approach to education. And he's like, you should check it out. I'm like, I'm good. Like, I love this. We've got this football team that's crushing it. Love my AD. Love the people around me.
The sun comes up down here.
Cool. Yeah. Like, I'm warm. And I'm like, you know what? Jeremy said I should do it. So like, sent it in. I had a blast interviewing and kind of really made that decision. But it was super weird to take a job around November and start the following August. So I am so lucky that the athletics department was supportive at Southeastern Louisiana to let me continue. And I didn't have to like hide things. You know, it was just a natural supportive transition. I was able to help kind of with the next steps for someone to take the job to.
Yeah, and it also gave them time probably to find the right person and not have to rush it. And I mean, those hiring cycles on the college side are very goofy in most best cases. So that probably gave them a little advantage. Did you teach in both the undergrad and the graduate program at Ohio?
I did, yeah.
So kind of talk about the difference between those two, like what the focus undergrad versus grad school is at Ohio.
Yeah, so amazing students in both programs. They have about 450 undergraduates. And then there's actually a different couple of graduate degrees within the sport industry segment. Currently, all of those programs are in a college of business. They were not when I started, but now they all are. And the undergraduate students, seeing them, there's some students that I had on their very first day on campus, like very first day. And then I still am like friends with them and like they have three kids and, you know, seeing that growth during your undergraduate years and being part of their career exploration. And you go to orientation sessions and you pitch the degree and you're talking to people about what it is. And without fail, 7 out of 10 people want to be the GM of the Yankees.
Yeah.
And,
or a sports agent. That was all the ones in my classes.
Yeah. Which is great. That's a good start. But then we say, like, are you a fan of sports or the fan of the business of sports?
Right.
And that's a really big difference. And so the nice thing about undergraduate programs is that it allows you to like come in or out depending on whether or not this is the right thing. So really well-rounded program, but definitely always had, was grounded in business and had a lot of experiential education worked in. Like the students have to do a ton of little experiences to get their feet wet with respect to where they want to head. Now we're also located in Little Athens, Ohio, with a great athletics program and not a lot of other sport opportunities until you hit Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati. Yep. So we basically are hand in hand with the athletics department.
And we'll be right back.
So what would you think if I told you that the 2026 World Cup is coming to Baltimore? Well, you'd probably say it's a long shot, right? Fact is, Baltimore has always been the underdog, and we have always risen to the challenge. So, here we are again, taking our shot at 2026, a chance to host match play on the world stage. Is it a long shot? Well, yeah. But guess what? We like it that way. This is Baltimore, a place made famous by long shots and unexpected victories. An underdog that's always been up for the challenge. A challenge we're happy to accept.
World Cup in Baltimore, Maryland. I'm in.
Now back to the show. One of our mutual friends, former guest Wilson Pack, is a Ohio Bobcat. So he went through that program. And I remember he did his in recreation management, I believe.
He did.
And he helped run the rec center up there. So that's a very niche market that, you know, running a rec program at a university is there's not a lot of people that do that. So I was very curious why he did it. And I think in the end, I think it definitely helped him out as far as running events. So it's not... It's not the same as running a Super Bowl, but that may be a good thing.
I'll tell you what, doesn't matter what Wilson Pack decided to do, he's going to be a superstar in it. So, I mean, you know, any of these academic programs is going to be what people make of it. And so what Wilson Pack did during his time in Athens was incredible. And he took advantage of every opportunity that he could sniff out to prepare himself for any aspect of the sport industry afterwards. And it's just working out for him. And I'm so happy for him. I never had a chance to have him in class, and we didn't get to know each other until recently through CrossFit, but man, that Athens connection, the Bobcat connection is strong.
Yeah. Well, one of our other colleagues, Megan Schmidt, is also a Ohio Bobcat. She works for the company I came from before I came to the Soccerplex that Wilson worked for when I was there. So I think that's how he ended up in Ohio, because of her. And that whole, how that network worked was fantastic. So,
well, yeah. And that's awesome. I'm glad you brought up network, because that's like a huge part of really what my job was at Ohio University, even as faculty, beyond just the content. It was helping everybody understand the value of helping each other. And you got to like do the job while you're in school. Like really, people remember if you're the one that doesn't pull your weight in a group project, and that can come back to really bite you in the industry that's this big, but this small.
Yeah. I hate group projects.
Yeah.
They were the worst in grad school.
But she's right though. Yeah. I mean, networking starts at the very beginning, to be honest, like the minute you step on campus, it's true.
Yeah. So beyond the university side of things, we've actually met a while ago when you were developing the professional development program for Sports ETA, which was NASC previously. Kind of talk about how you got into that side of things, because obviously there's a lot of people, I'm one of them, my undergrad degree is in political science and history, so BS and BS, and ended up in this industry that have no formal training in it. So the professional development side is what kind of got me to where I was for what I was doing. How did you kind of get into that phase of things?
Yeah, great question. I was, I cannot remember how I met Don Schumacher. I'm trying to think. I think because there was an NASC that was maybe in Cincinnati. And I think we like kind of said, hey, this thing is close. We should get involved. We should go because it's close. And I think we just really hit it off one-on-one. But with respect to like, hey, the education piece and what that might look like, there is a huge opportunity for universities and professional organizations in the event hosting, sport tourism, hospitality, merger of meeting planning. We just felt like there was something missing for people that might come into the industry in different ways, like you mentioned, that maybe didn't know they were going to head that way. So maybe they don't have the academic background in it. But even if they have a sport management degree, it's very rare that this is taught, that like sport tourism is even part of the conversation. I mean, I was teaching facility and event management. The students were required to take one class, facility and event management, together as an undergrad, and then one as a grad. Like that's it. And it really could be three different classes.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I think mine was combined as well. I think mine was facility.
Yeah, mine was just one. So I did my grad work at Georgetown. So, and we had a facility and operations. It was a single class as well. So I don't know how familiar with that program, but that's unique as far as I see it. It's all practicing professionals teach the class, which what drew me there, because I was like, it's great. You know, an academic wants to talk about how to run an event, but they haven't run an event in 20 years. Let me go find the person that, you know, runs the Marine Corps Marathon and ask him how he does it. So it was a very cool approach to it. And, you know, when I was going to undergrad and deciding what I was going to do for a major, sports management really wasn't a thing. I mean, there's a few handful of schools, Ohio being one of them. I think Syracuse is one that had a longstanding program, but it wasn't a thing. But now every school has a sports management program and they're trying to get into it. And I think it's diluting the pool a little bit. So kind of what's your take on the, you know, every school jumping into this, you know, head first saying, oh, sports management, we can draw kids here.
Yeah, I did spend a few years there as an associate dean. So I understand the university pressures to drive enrollment. And it's a really fun program to promote anywhere, because like, who doesn't want to talk about sports? So it's easy. It's easy to promote. And then the challenge is that differentiation piece. But I don't want to take away from students that choose a newer program or one that may have faculty that don't have a ton of practical experience, because I do think there's a role for kind of graduate certificates or professional organizations providing education and niche areas. Like I think three graduate classes that are specific to a thing like sport tourism, three classes, instead of like a 2-year master's degree. I think there's something in between there that can really serve a lot of students well. So I do think there are too many programs. I think the requirements to teach in the programs many places are probably not as high as they should be with respect to some experience in the industry. However, the accreditation standards for programs in academia continue to improve. So accredited programs are being asked to raise a bar in a lot of areas, and that's helping a lot.
Yeah. Do you think the education side is keeping pace with the ever-changing landscape of sport as a whole? Obviously, you look at sports now with the equality issue and things like that. Are we teaching that early enough in schools so when those kids are coming out and being leaders in the industry that they're making those changes to keep up with the pace of the sport itself?
No, but I'm not sure sport is keeping up with the world either. So I think it's like a trickle down of being just a little bit behind, and there's just not enough time. Like when you have 18-year-old freshman undergraduates that also have general ed requirements, there's only so much sport management you can do in an undergraduate degree while they're trying to cram everything else in and have a job. I mean, like really even asking them to go do internships means that they're setting aside maybe some of their part-time job that they really need. So it's a really delicate balance with respect to how much you can get into the undergrad level. I think you can tell I'm such a huge proponent of that. Like once you've kind of figured out where you're headed, you need to go do something else. And I'm not saying it's a full master's degree, but if it is a master's degree, you should go to Ohio. But not like I think organizations like Sports ETA are like in a unique place that if you go intern and you find this organization and this career track you're interested in, that organization has an obligation if they're going to keep you to also help you develop your skill sets. So there has to be opportunities for people to do so.
Yeah, I know. I've been a part of the education side of Sports ETA for a while, and we always struggle with like how do we teach the next generation so that somebody can replace me and I can retire? we always struggle on how to do that because like I don't necessarily think the schools will figure that out either. So how are we supposed to do it? And I think we're puttering along sometimes and just treading water till the next thing comes along. Like, oh yeah, we can do this. So I definitely feel that pain as well. All right. So done teaching. That's a big jump now. Teaching at a university to now working at CrossFit.
Not done teaching. I will continue to teach. I love it. I'm so thankful that I still live a couple miles from campus. Still get to interact with faculty. I can help out if they're going to work events, whatever they have going on. I'm around and I want to stay sharp, not only in my engagement to help students that are that next generation that's coming up, but also because I care so deeply about that academic program. I want to help the faculty. I want to be part of the university. So not done, but major, major change. You're right. So the company of CrossFit had gone through a ownership transition. During that transition, there were some changes with respect to how the company was going to move forward, which provided an opportunity that really was the job. If I had sat down to write the dream job, that was it. And the reason I was fortunate enough to be considered for it is that I had been doing academic research for the company since 2015. And so when you think about like, hey, weird how things can like come full circle. The story behind this one is that two of my friends, Norma Riley and Rick Burton, actually wrote an op-ed in Sport Business Journal back in about 2015 about the business potential of CrossFit. They knew I was doing CrossFit as a participant. So I gave them some context, was quoted in it, that type of thing. One of the leadership members from CrossFit called and said, great article, cold call. Great article. Why do you think we have potential? I was like, oh my gosh, CrossFit called. This is amazing. Right. I was like, by the end of the call, I had like volunteered all the students to do like a ton of work for them.
Gotta love that free labor of students.
Isn't that crazy? But like, that was the beginning of, I transitioned my academic research to answer business questions for CrossFit that also were based in academic research for kind of for-profit sports. In addition, I was able to pull a ton of students into both practical work, like taking them to the CrossFit games for data collection, having them work events, all the way through them being able to present back results to CrossFit And literally that was the beginning of a 5-year basically volunteer relationship, but I was so passionate about it as a participant and believed in the health benefits that my research did not feel like work anymore. It was amazing.
So awesome. Your official role is Director of Sport Operations. Talk through what that means, because I know that's much different for your organization than most people would imagine, because it encompasses so much more than just what happens on the competition floor.
Yeah, and it's hard to describe the company in a quick elevator pitch, but basically there are three big lines of business within CrossFit. The first being gyms. We affiliate about 12,500 gyms around the world. So we have a team that's solely focused on gyms and affiliates and servicing that group. We also have a team that is solely focused on education, and that is certifying and running seminars around the world on a weekly basis to certify new CrossFit trainers. And we have a kind of levels of certification. So that's our education department. Sport encompasses all of our media, which includes live stream, documentaries, studio shows. We produce all of that. Encompass all of our media, all of our partnerships and sponsorships across the entire company, and all of our sport competition. The CrossFit Games, where we crown the fittest on earth, all the way down to our CrossFit Open, which launches today for 2022, where we have had up to 400,000 people participate in this first stage of our competitive season. So the Director of Sport Operations is really unique because sport is across that from media to partnerships to competition. I help kind of like keep the team moving forward, making sure that we're like matching on strategy, heading in the right direction. And we have an amazing GM in Justin Berg, and that's actually the person I got to know while I was doing research. So we've known each other for quite some time now. And the company is still fairly small with really lofty goals. So it's incredibly exciting to be part of it right now.
Yeah, that was one thing that we talked about when Wilson was on, that people don't realize that CrossFit is a company and not an actual sport or event. It's the company that kind of owns the rights to it, though. And it's one of those, like, Kleenex is a brand, not an actual item type thing. So it's what always blows my mind when people just don't know that and don't realize that. But that's a branding challenge that you guys have to worry about. And I know you're very you're very protective of that brand, too.
Yeah, thankfully we have an amazing legal team that are always trying to help everybody kind of, you know, push this forward. But it is really different because it's not like a USOPC, like governed sport. So although we have like an internal governance structure, we are a brand. Like, it's totally different.
This may be beyond where you are with the company, but has they ever thought about going after that type of designation as a US or Olympic sport?
See, our mission is really to change lives through fitness. So sport is how we kind of get CrossFit in front of a global audience, right? So we're out there at the CrossFit Games. It's on CBS. We have the fittest people on earth there. But really what we're trying to do is have somebody watch that and say, man, I would really like to do that. Like, what is that? And see a commercial and say, oh, I bet there's a CrossFit gym in my area. I should like walk in the door. Well, that supports our small business owner that is the affiliate owner. And hopefully it allows you to go in, take CrossFit at whatever level is right for you, and really become healthier and live a more productive and longer life. And so it's weird because like the sport is not the company's overall mission. It would be very different. So it really would not align for us to do that. There is the sport of functional fitness, which does have like USA Functional Fitness and an international governing body. And you know, we're in very close contact with that group.
Yeah. What was Wilson's line? CrossFit is pushing the retirement home 1 week later.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
It was something along those lines. I'm going to go back and listen again, but it was, I was like, we were like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that although it is a brand and although sport is ultimately what you're doing, it's about bettering people as opposed to like focusing on like the necessary, although there is
competition. It's the means to the end.
Right. There you go. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah, exactly.
So you transitioned to this job in the middle of a pandemic. What was that like?
So this is where the event piece of the job comes in. And probably Wilson Pack might have mentioned this when he was chatting with you. It's been tough. It's challenged a lot of people. And we're a global brand that runs events. We have 10 semifinals around the world that we license and support that are part of our qualification system to the CrossFit Games every year. Well, we didn't know last year. I mean, like, we had deadlines, but we had to flip them to virtual events. And then, like, literally it went from those athletes thinking they were going to be in a stadium to having to video that tape themselves in their own gym with workouts we programmed and then send them in for judging. And like, half of the world did them virtually, half of the world did them with live audiences. And that's how we had to actually qualify people through to the CrossFit Games. And I am so proud to be part of a team that pulled off the CrossFit Games while the pandemic was still going on and as it is now, right? And we had a mass participant, we had a, you know, mass attended event. It went as well as it could have. Our protocols were in a good place, and it ended up being better than we could have hoped for.
Yeah, the event, Wilson's event down in Knoxville that I went to, was, I think, your first event back as an organization. And it was, I was different. I mean, it's much smaller than normal as a crowd standpoint, but it still felt good to, like, be back and watching a live event again.
Yeah,
also
for
seeing,
sure.
Was it Tia Toomey, the top women's?
Yeah.
She's incredible. Like, she scares me. She's, I not want to see her in a dark alley. I'm sure she's a very nice person, but she scares me.
Well, it's amazing. She's an Olympian in weightlifting. She's been the fittest on earth in CrossFit. And now they are about to pick the Olympic team for bobsled. And she's a bobsledder for Australia. So, yeah. So stay tuned, because she might be in the Winter Olympics too.
Crazy.
Yeah.
People shouldn't have that much talent.
At that event,
right?
Knoxville, she was done her exercise and was, like, playing with her kid while everyone else is still working. Because, like,
she
blew them out by minutes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was absurd. She is incredible.
It's really impressive. It's impressive. Yep.
But that kind of leads to the next question. And I think we talked before we did this interview that we're focusing a lot on women in sports for this whole season. Why is CrossFit so good at developing female athletes and the equality across the sport itself? You know, your team events are co-ed events. So it's, you know, that's not always seen in sports.
It's one of the things that drew me to a career with CrossFit. CrossFit has had equal prize money since the very first CrossFit Games. It is who they are. It's not even a consideration. There are not, we don't have a sponsor for a men's event and a women's event. Like you said, the teams are two and two. And the way CrossFit works, whether it's your community gym or the CrossFit Games, the workouts are the same with a scaled, like, weight on the bar. But really, we had an event that had a portion of it was swimming and paddling, and women beat the men. So, like, it's a sport that, although the weight on the bar will be reduced and very carefully reduced because we have so much data on all of this. But that even happens in our community gyms. Men and women are in there doing the same workouts and respect each other for where they are physically. And it's not like a knock on anybody if the thing says 95 pounds on the barbell and you're literally using a PVC pipe that's 3 pounds that day. It, like, you're still doing the exact same movements. And it's the same thing at the CrossFit Games. The men and women, although they're in different heats for the individual events, the workouts, you know, the way that, like, the rower calculates meters, there might be a few less meters for the women just because pole strength, but the workouts are the same. And it's one of the few sports, you know, like that, where you can put people on the competition floor at the same time and let them go to town.
Yeah, it's great to watch. And you know, we've been asking everyone that's come on these same three questions. So we'll walk through it with you, because I know we're short on time a little bit with you. What challenge do you see for women playing sports and also working in sports currently?
I think the challenge is to not be complacent with the advancements that we have seen in equity. So just because we had a generation of women that got Title IX to where it is, and then another generation that understood the value and the impact of Title IX, now I do worry that we have a generation of amazing female athletes that have had very equitable experiences that may not have a full understanding of the fact that they need to keep pushing or it won't stay that way. And I wish I didn't have to say that, but there's an effort involved in even keeping the amount of equity that is there in many sports and many organizations, that we can't become complacent that everything's fine, because it's not.
So the flip side of that, what advantage do you think women have when it comes to playing sports and working in sports?
man, I think women have this innate ability to bring the human side to any situation. And I think the workplace, I think the sports, you know, the sports arena, they are as competitive or maybe more competitive than most men that I've interacted with, both on a professional level and on the competition floor. But at the same time, they value the personal connection and want to see others do well too. And not that men can't do that or don't do that, but it's a little bit more of a cultural where how you've come up and how you're expected to act in both the professional space and on the sports field. And so I just love that mix of like, Kim, we're like super cool, but like when that clock says 3, 2, 1, go, my elbow might hit you in the face. But we'll be cool again when I beat you at the finish line, right?
Not really, because she went to Florida State, remember?
Yeah, that's true.
No, we'll be fine.
Well, we really do need the board with the tally marks. So we'll count yours as empathy, because I think that's kind of what you were getting at. That's been a very common theme to answers that we got, that and attention to detail.
Yeah, and our ability to multitask have been the three like top answers to that question.
So yeah, it totally makes sense.
The last one, what advice do you have for young women that want to work in sports or play sports or what work in the just general sports industry? What advice do you have for them as they come up through the ranks or when they're making a decision in school, what they should do to get where you are?
Yeah, so a plan is great. Having a trajectory, knowing where you want to go, amazing. Be flexible and open to new opportunities. I know a lot of women, because they feel like they are trying to excel and hard driving, and they're really working hard towards a singular objective where they want to be before they're 30, where they want to be on some arbitrary timeline, that sometimes the blinders may not allow them to see that a skill set, an opportunity, someone in their network, like has something that would be a great pivot for them. And so just being open to that and using that network, right? Creating your network, using your network. And you don't have to be a huge extrovert to do that. You just have to have meaningful connections with people along the way that are willing to call you out on your crap if you're being, you know, like if you're being closed-minded about something. Like we all need to be checked sometimes.
Absolutely. I love that.
All right. We have taken enough of your time. I know you have to get back to your regular life. So I can't thank you enough for joining us on the show and thanks for being here.
Awesome. Thanks to you both so much. I had a lot of fun.
The Pitch Side from the Plex podcast is supported by Sam Soccer. Sam Soccer provides developmental and educational soccer programs in Montgomery County. SAM offers classes, clinics, and leagues for children 2 to 18. All league games are home games at SAM Soccer, offered at the prestigious Maryland Soccerplex. Check out samsoccer.org for more information.
What if it was possible to get fresh local produce and groceries delivered right to your front door? All that extra time not worrying about shopping, learn a new language, knit a blanket, or even learn to fly. Instacart provides you unlimited grocery delivery for one low, flat monthly fee. There's no separate fee for each time you use the app like their competitors. You choose from multiple local stores, including many that you probably already use. Products are hand-selected by their shoppers to find you fresh ingredients, also protecting your eggs and keeping your bread from getting smashed in the bottom of the bag. You can find everything you normally buy, plus smart suggestions for new items. Instacart will highlight deals to help save you money, with delivery to your door in as fast as 1 hour. You can start your 14-day free trial by following the link in our show notes. Following the link lets Instacart know we sent you and helps us support our show. Instacart. Never step foot in a grocery store again. So second CrossFit guest.
Still not going to do
it. Still not going to do it?
Okay. I don't think so. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love the mission. They've sold me on that. Like, it's not fully about the sport. It's about the bettering the human. Love that.
Yeah, the answer when that is about, like, becoming an Olympic sport. Like, that, again, love the answer. Made total sense.
And yeah, but that's not their goal.
Knowing your role. And
yeah.
Knowing where you fit in the world.
That makes total sense. Yeah, I don't know. It seems... It just seems a little intimidating still, but maybe I'll walk into a CrossFit gym and I'll just figure it out. I don't know.
I want to be there for this.
No.
But her journey, I mean, it's a very, like, odd way to get where she is.
Yes and no. It actually sort of made sense to me. But I love how, like, her, this, she spent so much time in the university setting. I think that that's, if I could have done more of that, I think I would have done that. I think being on, like, a university campus and being part of the, you know, student athlete world and all of that, I think that's all very cool.
I mean, she definitely sounds like the fun professor because she's still in communication with her students. And I mean, there's a couple grad school teachers I still talk to, but I don't talk to any undergrad teachers for sure.
I don't talk to any of my undergrad professors, but there were some that,
I don't remember who most of them are.
There were some that, like, she mentioned where, like, I had them as a freshman and then I saw them, like, when I was a senior, and, like, that was very cool. Like, and also, like, having the same advisor for, like, the 4 years I was there, and, like, I got to know him pretty well and he was a good mentor. But I think the part of the fit, like, I left the state of Florida, like, that I think kind of lends itself to, like, not, I didn't really stay in contact with any of them.
Yeah, she went from no sunshine to sunshine, all the sunshine to no sunshine again.
Yeah. I don't – yeah, well, so did I sort of. I mean, well
– you've moved everywhere.
That's true. So. But I did go from, like, warm climate to then having to have a parka in the winter, which is not fun.
So you didn't know about the senior women administrator role?
No, I didn't. I guess I should have figured that that was a thing. I mean, I know there was a title – there was specifically people who were responsible for overseeing Title IX and making sure that it was implemented correctly, making sure they were in compliance, all of that. Like, I knew that was a thing, but I didn't know that there was, like, a senior women administrator. Like, I didn't know that that was a thing.
Yeah, I will say I always thought that there was, like, specific roles that person does, but it sounds like it's just whoever the senior female athletic administrator is gets that title. The role can change school to school, but I do appreciate the fact that even if there's a female AD, that there's still a separate senior women administrator. They don't.
Yeah.
So focus, probably need to change the name, but, you know, that's fine.
And she did mention that, like, the sports management program was not originally part of the business school, which it was not for me. We were part of the College of Education. So I have a College of Education degree, not a business degree.
That's what I was asking about, the kinesiology. A lot of schools throw it in there, which kinesiology, most people have no clue what that is, but it's about, like, the movement, like,
it's kinesiology movement. Is like physical therapy and all of that. Yeah. Like,
I think it was one of those things when sports management started to be growing, like, no one knew what to do with it.
Right.
Like, we'll just throw it here because this makes sense.
But that doesn't make sense because it's not a science or, like, an anatomy based. Yeah. It's a business based thing, so it should be part of the business school. That's what makes sense.
Yeah. But I mean, I think they need to teach more business in those programs and not just throw it into the business school. Like, you know, accounting needs to be a part of every one of these people's education. No matter what job you're in, like, you got to build a budget. Like, you have to understand how that works. And I don't think that is taught enough. And I think that's where some of the programs that are more practical, like Ohio, that teach what it is in the real life and not just out of a textbook.
Yeah.
I think that's definitely beneficial.
The same three answers, I think we should talk about, the same, like, similar answers came up again.
So empathy it is. Yeah. We really do need, like, the scoreboard on the wall in here somewhere. Like, we'll have to go back and, like, remember what everybody wrote or said, but it's the same three.
Yeah, and I like that she also pointed out that, like, to be flexible, that just because you go into school and think you're going to be on this track, that if something else piques your interest, or if somebody has an opportunity for you or you know, poses something else to you, then take it. Like, do it, because you never know, like, where that's going to lead you, and that it might be a better option. I mean, when I went into school, I was set on being a sports agent. That's what I was going to do.
Oh, you were one of those people.
I was. God. But it's because I was coming at it from, like, oh, I'm going to be a female in a man's world. Like, I mean, that's where I was coming.
So you'd be fine with that.
Okay. Well, you know, I was coming at it from being like, I want to be a, you know, groundbreaker in the industry and all of that. But then I was like, I took my first couple pre-law classes and I was like, no, thanks.
Well, you don't have to be a lawyer for most agents don't have to be lawyers.
You don't have to be, but it's a good idea if you are, because contract law is important.
Yeah. So, like, the NFL has, like, the most restrictive rules for agents. Like, you have to have a graduate degree. Yeah. It doesn't have to be in law, but you have to have a graduate degree. But, like, baseball, you could be a high school graduate, walk out the door, and, like,
that's true,
be a baseball agent. So, when I was at Georgetown,
but you also, unless you're, like, in the top, like, 2%, you also make zero money, I figured out.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. What was it? I forget
what. Not to say I'm rolling in dough now, but like
when
that
I
was also
when I took my sports law class. Like we were talking about agents, and like the guy works on the NFLPA side of things, so he deals with agents all the time. So he gave like the requirements, what it is for them, and then like different sports. But then he put up numbers, and he was like, in the NFL, they're however it's like a couple hundred agent registered agents, and like they have to pay a fee and meet the requirements. But in the NFL, you have to have a client within, I think it's like 2 years of registering, or they kick you. Like you can't be an agent anymore in the NFL.
Yeah.
But like Major League Baseball, you can just register to be an agent. And he's like,
that's what I would do. I would just like register as an agent.
Thousands of agents register for Major League Baseball, but none of them have clients. Like it's absurd. So you can just walk around like, hey, I'm a Major League Baseball agent. And like, who's your clients? Oh, I don't have any.
Like, just make a business card, pass it around at bars.
Yeah, why not?
Okay.
Hey, you never know. One time you're going to find this like 12-year-old kid that's like the phenom on the field somehow, and he's going to be your client.
He's going to remember me.
Yeah.
Sure.
I did like her comment about what challenges women have about not being complacent. I think we're probably getting to that point where things for women have gotten so much better that some people may take it for granted and don't keep pushing to get back or get to the equality side of things or the equitable side of things. And you know, we may start seeing that, that fall off, and you know, girls that are playing now don't necessarily have the struggles that you may have had or people that before you had, and they don't know they need to keep fighting for it.
Yeah. I mean, at some point it's like a double-edged sword, right? Cause you want things to improve so much that we don't continue to have these problems. But then that also creates the complacency aspect where it's like, do we, you know, how do we continue to work for more? I don't know the answer to that question. I'm hoping that at some point.
Well, I think you need more organizations like CrossFit, where she said they've always had equal prize money, men and women. There's never been a difference. So I think more approaches like that where it starts on equal playing field and you're not having to get to equal playing field will make the difference. All right. It's been a long day.
Yeah. I mean, and we didn't bring up the fact that you went to the University of Florida that many times. Just a couple.
Gator chomp. Gator chomp.
No. Go Noles.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Pitchside from the Plex podcast. Head to mdsoccerplex.org to listen to old episodes and view episode notes. Follow us at mdsoccerplex on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Be sure to join us again soon. Pitchside from the Plex is produced by Matt Liver and Kim Walter, with support from Alexis Andricat-Price and Gary Burke.